everybody. This is Eric, and welcome to Anti-Visions. Well, lately, I've been talking about critical race theory, surprise, surprise, but specifically about it, how it manifests in schools, particularly K through 12 public education. Despite the fact, as I've talked about before, that the media has launched a campaign claiming that critical race theory is not being taught in public schools. It's something that's only taught in law school at graduate, postgraduate levels and the like. However, I'm not going to focus on that right now, but already last week, one of the major education agencies came out and said, yes, we are teaching critical race theory in K through 12 schools, and we need to. So there's a big contradiction. I've got some posts about it on antivisions.com. That's not going to be the focus here. Like I said, the focus is just to look at how is it actually manifesting? What is the fruit of critical race theory in the schools? How does it play out? It's not being taught. The theory itself is not being taught. It's being implemented. And so I've also talked about equity several times, and I have a podcast I did quite a while ago on equity versus equality. And this particular article and topic that I'm going to focus on is equity being implemented in schools. And it's really a manifestation of critical race theory, because the rationale is coming from racial inequities. Okay, so this article is in Reason Magazine called "In the Name of Equity, California Will Discourage Students Who Are Gifted at Math." So I'm going to read a little bit and comment on it. And like I said, the focus is equity. And of course, what you'll see is it's not just in California. It's in, there's another article I have about a school district, not just school district, it's all across Virginia is doing the same thing as what California is doing. And this is especially happening at universities. And we're talking big name universities. So it shouldn't be a surprise that it's trickling down to public education, because it's been a talking point for a long time. Okay, so let's just get into this. In the name of equity, California is going to discourage students who are gifted at math. This was posted May 4th, 2021. And the subtitle is, "The new framework aims to keep everyone learning at the same level for as long as possible." I will just comment. For some people, that's music to their ears. And for others, that's very disturbing. So it very much depends on your vision of the world and just the idea of anti-visions. What is your vision of the world? Do you have an unlimited vision of the world or a limited vision of the world? So I'm not going to go into the philosophy of that, but I'm going to read on. California's Department of Education is working on a new framework for K through 12 mathematics that discourages gifted students from enrolling in accelerated classes that study advanced concepts like calculus. The draft of the framework is hundreds of pages long and covers a wide range of topics, but its overriding concern is inequity. The department is worried that too many students are sorted into different math tracks based on their natural abilities, which leads some to take calculus by their senior year of high school, while others don't make it past basic algebra. The department's solution is to prohibit any sorting until high school, keeping gifted kids in the same classrooms as their less mathematically inclined peers until at least grade 9. Okay, so I'm going to just pause there for a second. I can't remember if this article does. I know the one on Virginia does, but it makes it pretty clear that the inequities that they're particularly focusing on, and this is where critical race theory comes in, is the disparity of the performance of white students and black students. They're not as concerned. I mean, if it benefits them, they'll throw in the Hispanics, but mostly not as concerned. So according to critical race theory, disparities, if there's a racial disparity, or at least Ibram Kendi would espouse this, he might claim he's not a critical race theorist, but that's just another story. It just gets so confusing. But the bottom line is we just have to believe what people say, and we also have to believe what the when they implement their ideas and it manifests in a certain way, that it also reveals intentions or maybe the true purpose of what it's for. So basically, critical race theory perceives any disparity, any racial disparity, meaning let's say you're talking about income and you're looking at a population and you see that there are more white people that make more money than black people. That's an income disparity. Or if you're looking at education and you look at graduation rates and you see that not as many black students graduate, or maybe the ratio of black students is not as high when you're looking at the top of their class. So that's a disparity in education. Those are disparities. Now, the thing about critical race theory is that it tells you there's only one way to see it, and there's no willingness to bring in any other viewpoint, like Thomas Sowell. So, for instance, his work on discrimination and disparities, and many of his works discuss this. You never hear the work of others engaged because the point is that they're just trying to defend racism. Never mind that he's an African American. It's still, it just has to be their way or the highway, and they're not willing to entertain other reasons for these disparities. And oftentimes, I believe it causes major problems because we're trying to take a really oversimplified solution and apply it to a highly complex problem, which causes us to overlook massive social and cultural issues at hand and sweep them all under the rug. But what they claim is that by taking on and espousing the view that I'm saying, which would be, hey, this is complex, they're saying, well, you're sweeping race under the rug. And so we need to make race the absolute pinnacle of everything. So that's ultimately undergirding this effort in equity in education. So here we find that there's this framework, hundreds of pages long. You got to dig through it. It's mostly concerned with equity, and it basically wants to say all students have to stay on the same level in the same classes. You can't have advanced classes. You can't have a student who, you know, maybe is in ninth grade but doing math at an 11th grade level. Okay, so. Or even advanced in their own level. So I know when I was in high school, you still had, even if you were doing math on the same grade level, you still had advanced placement classes or IB classes, things like that, that if you were a more advanced student, you could be on a more advanced track, even though it was on the same subject. Maybe it was Algebra 1, but you were still in an advanced Algebra 1 class. So they want to do away with all of that and are doing away with all of that. So I'm going to keep reading. The inequity of mathematics tracking in California can be undone through a coordinated approach in grades 6 through 12, reads a January 2021 draft of the framework. In summary, middle school students are best served in heterogeneous classes. Okay, so that's what I was talking about. Heterogeneous classes meaning there's not an advanced class, and all, if you're ninth grade, regardless of who you are, regardless of your ability, you're going to all be in the same level classes. And this is interesting because they're saying that the inequity of mathematics tracking in California will be undone through this approach. So they have figured out the solution to to undo inequity. So once they implement this, they're claiming that eventually, now the proof is in the pudding, but the sad thing is that there's this whole slew of students that are the guinea pigs, and they're going to pay a high price for it. So the inequity part they're claiming will be undone simply by this solution, which means that they think they know what the cause is. The cause in the problems with mathematics, the inequities, they claim, has to do with the way that mathematics is taught. Now, there are a lot of undergirding ideas that are not addressed in this article in particular, but that I know are informing these decisions, because in the broader conversation, which critical race theory has a major part in that conversation, one of the ideas is that mathematics is white and it's been colonized. And so we need to decolonize mathematics, and we need to remove whiteness from mathematics. And I'll try to find some sources on that, but that's been a hot topic, especially in California. So that might be a surprise to some of you, but that's also behind it. So ultimately, the idea is that racism is part of the reason why there are these disparities or inequities in mathematics. And so the effort is going to be, hey, we're going to make sure that these advanced students can't advance more. Now, they would never say it like that, but that's what's being said, is, hey, if you're advanced or exceptionally skilled, you're tough luck. Or if you transfer in from another state or from a private school where you might be two grade levels ahead in mathematics, too bad. You're going to have to just, sit back in the ninth grade pre-algebra class. So I'm going to read more. They say, the push to calculus in grade 12 is itself misguided, says the framework. Now, Virginia also says the same thing. They talk about how, not even all universities require students to have calculus, and it's kind of silly because, when students go to college, they have to take calculus again. So I guess basically what they're saying is tough luck for these kids that, wanted to apply to some of these maybe higher level universities where I'm sure you need to have calculus on your transcripts, regardless of whether they're going to make you take it again. I mean, they make you take poli-sci again. They make you take U.S. history again. That's a non-argument. You still have to take poli-sci, at least when I was in high school, political science, U.S. history. You had to take a semester of economics. So just to say that, universities, they make you take it again. Well, if they require you to take it in high school, they do. And curriculum is normally spiral, so that what you learn, say, in U.S. history when you're in fifth grade isn't the same thing as what you learn in middle school. You learn more detail and more complex ideas. And then you get to high school, it gets more complex, even though it's the same subject, okay? Same thing. And then you get to college, and it's, I remember being in college, and this is the story of a lot of people. You take history classes or different courses that maybe you did take in high school, but you learn things that you didn't learn when you were in high school because you just weren't at the academic level of information. The article even goes on to say, the framework's overriding perspective is that teaching the tough stuff is college's problem. The K-12 system should concern itself with making every kid fall in love with math. Broadly speaking, this entails making math as easy and unmath-like as possible. Math is really about language and culture and social justice, and no one is naturally better at it than anyone else, according to the framework. All students, this is a quote from from chapter one of the framework, all students deserve powerful mathematics. We reject ideas of natural gifts and talents. The belief that I treat everyone the same is insufficient. Active efforts in mathematics teaching are required in order to counter the cultural forces that have led to and continue to perpetuate current inequities. So I'm going to pause there. So this is saying that they don't believe that, you know, there is such thing as a natural gift or talent. Basically, we are going to disregard anyone's skill level, and we're going to make you function at the same level as anyone else. And we're going to disregard if you're naturally gifted. But we're also going to disregard if you are inclined, like if it's something you enjoy versus something you don't enjoy. And that's part of, on a broader conversation about equity, inequities, disparities, part of what plays into disparities is not always skill level, it's also preference. So if you prefer something, you will work at it harder. And generally, people prefer things that they're better at anyway. So if you look at different fields of study and you neglect the question, does this person enjoy this, then you're not actually looking at all the variables that are going into it. So the fact is, if a student who is really, really, really inclined towards math and engineering, and they really like it, they're going to work really hard at it. Whereas you might have someone else who is just as capable, okay, but they're not inclined towards that. They're inclined towards maybe medicine. And so they spend more time in the sciences, and they don't perform as well, and they don't go as high in mathematics as the other one. I mean, I'm thinking about so many studies about math, engineering, women, and men. So many studies show that, you know, because the claim is, well, we have basically cultivated that mathematics and engineering is for men, and that's why there aren't as many women in it. And also, you know, we've been living on the stereotype that girls can't do math as well. Well, that's not true. That's changed over the course of time. And there are so many more girls that perform at the same level as guys in college or even beyond. So those statistics, hanging on to those old stats, you know, claiming we're back in the 1950s is ridiculous. But the other fact is, even if those girls outperform guys, typically women like people. They like people more than they like things. And engineers typically like things. They're not typically as into people. Now, that might sound like a stereotype, but that's generally the case. So generally, women don't enjoy being in a field that's not so relational. So they typically will go towards maybe, like I said, something in medicine. They might go for being a doctor or go for being a nurse or just go for a completely different kind of career. Those variables play into it. It doesn't have to do with skill level. Now, some people don't like that idea that women and men might be different in that regard, and there are exceptions. But I can think of, I even had a friend at in university that graduated as a, I can't remember what kind of engineer, went on, worked for a big company down in the Gulf of Mexico and was making some big bucks. But even after years of being an engineer, and I don't know, maybe it was, I can't remember if it was 5 or 10 years, she switched careers. She actually went back to school and became a nurse because she felt that engineering just wasn't fulfilling enough. So we have to understand that there's a lot more going on in disparities than that. Now, I know, of course, we are addressing more of the socioeconomic issues like poverty and cycles of poverty and things like that that are playing into education, which do overlap with race. But to reduce it to something so simple and say, well, basically the reason why, you know, this population isn't performing as well in mathematics is because we've been racist in the way we teach it. And another underlying idea that doesn't show up in this article is that standardized testing is racist. Not only is math racist and needs to be decolonized, but standardized testing. Now, I don't love standardized testing. Don't get me wrong. But the claim is, And this is really being pushed at the universities. So more and more universities are saying, well, you don't have to take the GRE or you don't have to take the SAT. That's a big conversation. Why? Because they say that the SAT or the GRE or whatever these tests are culturally biased, and they're biased towards white people. That's the claim. Now, if you want to argue that or contend with that, even in the world of academia, then you're just labeled a racist. But the reality is that Asians far outperform whites in on those tests and in general, in any education. If you look at California's education, who is at the top? Who's performing at the top? It will be Asians. If you look at Virginia's, they even have it graphed out. They're performing far above the white students. So the way that they've dealt with that over the years is to say that Asians are basically white by proxy. And so they get thrown into the whiteness bus, never mind the fact that some of them maybe are first generation from Vietnam or South Korea or, you know, wherever, and they've worked really hard. I mean, I knew some from when I was in elementary school that came over, were first generation, and by high school were performing at really high levels. And that's not uncommon because of their family and their culture, but they've just been thrown in with white. So it doesn't, so that it basically doesn't throw a wrench in the whole discussion on disparity and equities. Now, it's come back to bite the left because now we have a major problem with Asian hate crimes. And the majority of Asian hate crimes are not committed. I'm talking like well more than 90% are not committed by white people. But what they want to say is it's white supremacy that's causing this problem. However, it's actually been the left that has been discriminating against Asians. Yale was actually sued by the Department of Justice just a year or two ago because for 50 years they have been purposely, and it's become more pronounced. I think there probably for a time it was because of affirmative action, but they weaved it into their practices to where it was just a clear discrimination against Asians and whites, particularly Asians, though, because Asians are the most likely to score highest and to have everything that Yale would require. And so they have been purposely discriminating. The Department of Justice, that is definitely not right-leaning these days anymore, it shouldn't have a political leaning, but is not, sued Yale for this very reason, because they've embedded it so that it's not just kind of an affirmative action practice. It has gotten to be where they discriminate out and outright against Asians and whites. Now, eventually the lawsuit was dropped, but we know that it is the case. So basically they were allowed to get away with it. Now, the statistics and the reality, it's a known fact. And so the left has no problem with this. And there was, I think there was even some legislation that was voted on a while back at the federal level that would have addressed some of these issues because it deals with funding and whatnot. And all of those on the left voted against it. So basically what they're saying is we don't care that Asians are discriminated against. And besides, if they are considered to be their own people group, with, you know, when you're talking about the theory of intersectionality, you're talking about identity politics. If we allow Asians to be considered their own people group, then it throws a big, huge monkey wrench in our whole claim about white supremacy. But it's not just Asians. So Africans come over, people from Sweden, Denmark, you know, parts of Europe come over and live here or immigrate here or come and work here, and their kids get into our school system and they're able to perform or outperform in general students in standardized testing, particularly when you get to the level of SAT and GRE. So it's not just the Asians. So the question is, if it really is geared towards white, Western, not just Western, but American students, how is it that there are all these people groups or immigrants from other countries that can do it? If that's the theory, then they would also be pushed out, right? They would not be performing the way that they are. So those things, now you're just called a racist for bringing that up. And in the level of academia, when it comes to research, it's very difficult for social scientists. It's become a pseudoscience now, but for social scientists or other academics to even do studies or research on this, because then they're just labeled a racist. So I'm going to go back and just read a little more from this article. The entire second chapter of the framework is about connecting math to social justice concepts like bias and racism. I'm just going to pause there. I mean, I didn't know that math had something to do with social justice and racism, but these guys know. They know this. So here's a quote from the framework. Teachers can support discussions that center mathematical reasoning rather than issues of status and bias by intentionally defining what it means to do and learn mathematics together in ways that include and highlight the languages, identities, and practices of historically marginalized communities. Teachers should also think creatively about what math even entails. Quote, to encourage truly equitable and engaging mathematics classrooms, we need to broaden perceptions of mathematics beyond methods and answers so that students come to view mathematics as a connected, multidimensional subject that is about sense-making and reasoning, to which they can contribute and belong. I'm going to pause there. Now, first of all, there's a lot of jargon that I think is just dishonest. A lot of jargon. It sounds good. It sounds nice. Yes, we want math to be about sense making and reasoning as though it wasn't before. And as though allowing students to advance in mathematics was encouraging them to not make sense of it and encouraging them not to use reasoning. Aside from the fact, I'm just going to mention as well that this also hinders and hurts the students who are of color and are advanced. So their claim is that basically black people just can't do this. You know, they just can't handle it. But instead, what they want to say is, hey, no, what I'm going to say is that it's just racist and biased against them, and that's why they can't do it. Okay. But it's actually not true. Now, maybe statistically there aren't as many, and that is a problem, and we need to figure that out. I just think they have the wrong solution. There aren't as many students performing at advanced levels who are African American, but there are African American students who are performing at advanced levels, and they are being punished as well. It's a bad approach. Like I was saying, it's a bunch of jargon, and what they're claiming is that you know, these cultural biases have been in mathematics for so long, so it leaves behind African Americans. They're going to claim people of color, but African Americans, and it's not about sense making and reasoning and practical real world stuff. And so it's kind of geared towards those white American students. I mean, when you really question it, it doesn't make sense. But anyway, I'm reading the article. Contrary to what this guidance seems to suggest, math is not the end-all and be-all, and it's certainly not something that all kids are equally capable of learning and enjoying. Some young people clearly excel at math, even at very early ages. Many schools offer advanced mathematics to a select group of students well before the high school level so that they can take calculus by their junior or senior year. It's done this way for a reason. The students who like math, usually a minority, should have the opportunity to move on as rapidly as possible. For everyone else, well, advanced math just isn't that important. It would be preferable for schools to offer students more choices and offer them as early as possible. Teens who are eager readers should be able to study literature instead of math. Young people who aren't particularly adept at any academic discipline might pick up art, music, computers, or even trade skills. Coding doesn't need to be mandatory, but it could be an option. The essence of good schooling is choice. Individual kids benefit from a wide range of possible educational options. Holding back kids who are gifted at math isn't equitable. On the contrary, it's extremely unfair to everyone. Yet the framework seems to reject the notion that some kids are more gifted than others. An important goal of this framework is to replace ideas of innate mathematics, talent, and giftedness with the recognition that every student is on a growth pathway, the framework states. Quote, there is no cutoff determining when one child is gifted and another is not. But cutoffs are exactly what testing and grading systems produce. and it's absurdly naive to think there's nothing innate about such gross outcomes, given that intelligence is at least partly an inherited trait. Okay, I'm going to pause there for a moment. I've talked about equity many times before, and like I said, I've done a podcast on it, but at the bottom line, equity is the enemy of equality. And it sounds good and it sounds like an American thing, but it is not, because equity is about equal outcomes, that everybody ends up in the same place. Equality is about equal opportunity. Everyone gets the same chance. Everyone's treated equally. Well, you can tell even reading their framework, they say that's a bad thing when you say everybody should be treated equally. But if you're talking about the law or the rule of law or so many things, when it comes to justice, that's what the civil rights movement was about, is that everybody's treated equally. So what they're fighting for is, in Ibram Kendi's words, discrimination, anti-racist discrimination, is good, in his words. But the problem with equity, pursuing equal outcomes, is first of all that it's impossible. Like Thomas Sowell, the famous economist, said, and he's a worldwide, you know, highly studied man, traveled the world. There is no time or place in history or any culture that has ever had equal outcomes ever. It's just not normal. There are disparities that we should look at. There are disparities when it comes to crime rates and it comes to education, you know, and things that do involve race. But like I said, it's not just one simplistic answer. But there are many disparities that are just natural, as in, you know, like I said, some people prefer one field than another, therefore they put more effort into it, therefore they're better at it than somebody else. Some people have more skill. Not everybody is as fast at track. Not everybody's going to be a professional basketball player or football player or baseball player. It's just the reality of it. No matter how hard you try, even within a family, if three kids are born in a family, all three of them will be different and there will be disparities. And it has nothing to do with the parents not loving them or treating one different than the other. You'll probably have one kid that's going to be smarter than others. They might all be super, super smart, but one might really excel. Another might really struggle. Another one might be extremely athletic while the other one is super clumsy. So Those are disparities, and they're normal. Or if you get into a classroom setting, like what we're talking about education, if you have a grading system and you put even if you put 10 kids in a classroom, teach them the same content, the chances are not all 10 of those kids have the same intelligence level, right? And for that reason, certain kids are going to perform higher. Now you throw in another factor. Some of those kids will really like it. Other kids will be bored out of their mind, and so they're not going to focus as much. So that also affects the disparity. There are also, like we were talking about Asians before, but they're not the only ones, but they really represent this well, are those that typically work really, really hard at it. So they go home, they put in hours. And you know, when it comes to math or any academic subject, putting hours into it pays you back. And it's like comparing apples to oranges when you have someone else who didn't put hours into it, but they did have the opportunity and the choice. Now, we can talk about social issues and how much harder it might be because of poverty and whatever, but at the end of the day, do we punish the person who purposely put in more effort? So if you're talking about grades, there will always be a bell curve. There will always be. You can't have equal outcome. The only way you can have equal outcome is to get rid of the grading system or to rig the grading system, because no one will be equal. But if you want equity, you have to control the system or you have to control people. So as of right now, what they're doing is they're controlling the system. They're trying to control these other variables because they can't control, you know, the performance of students. But it's like Kurt Vonnegut's Harrison Bergeron. It's a satire. It's a short story. You probably could read it online if you go read it. But for the students who are really smart, they'd put this device on their head that would release like a really loud beep sound into their ear that would hurt. and would also distract them so that they couldn't think that well. They couldn't concentrate as much in school because it wouldn't fare because the other kids, you know, weren't as smart as them. Or like if you were a really talented ballerina, and of course there are other girls that are clumsy ballerinas, so the talented ones would have sandbags, you know, tied around their ankles. So basically they were... It was the handicapper general is what it was called. He, like the attorney general, he's the handicapper general and would handicap people in order to bring them down to the level so that everyone could be equal. That is equity. That's what equity is. Equity requires controlling the system and controlling people in order to get that output to be all the same. And that's not what we really want, but that's what's happening. And so it's really important to understand when there are these discussions about equity or even these discussions about critical race theory, they say, well, we're not teaching critical race theory. We're just looking for equity and inclusion. Okay, well, inclusion is a good thing, but the way that they're using equity is not good. It means equal outcome. So that is what's going on in this school. There are many others that I have an article about in Vancouver. They got rid of their advanced programs. I'll have to look, like magnet type programs. And then also in Virginia, they're having major problems with this. There are also schools that are public schools throughout the country that normally you had to apply to get in. Like you had to have a certain test score and be able to do these certain things because it was like a very focused kind of school, where now they're saying, no, we're not going to do that. We're just going to have a lottery. So for those students who were really advanced in STEM or maybe the arts or medicine or whatever it was, it takes away that opportunity. There's not anywhere for them to go where they could actually, you know, cultivate that particular field. You're just turning it into just another school in the name of fairness and equity. Okay, well, I will come back and focus on a couple of other articles. I know for some of you it might be a surprise, but you might think, well, this would never happen in Texas. This would never happen in Oklahoma. Or, hey, you know, more and more states have actually signed legislation, including Texas, that does not allow critical race theory to be implemented in the schools. But friends, the fight is not over. At the federal level, at the level of corporate America, at the level of, it doesn't matter if it's professional sports or the entertainment industry, the gatekeepers of culture want this. And so I would not rest easy and say, well, there's legislation now. Because at the federal level, they're looking at ways to undo that legislation, to actually say that that legislation is not legal, and they'll probably sue about it. And they're also trying to pass their own legislation to implement this. So you could wake up tomorrow and everything is federalized. So we can't rest easy just in our state. We should work local. That's where everything happens. Work local. You know, but understand that just because things are okay in my town doesn't mean that everything will be okay tomorrow. So with that happy thought, I'll let you guys go and hope to see you next time.